I believe we are there. Still saying setting up, but we're probably live right now. Here we go. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. It's Angie Atkinson, and I'm here with the lovely and talented Dana Morningstar. Dana, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Always happy to have you. So before we get started, while we're waiting, let me just say hello just in case in the chat. While we're waiting for everyone to jump in, we'll just give you the quick rundown. And here we go. So we do this stream usually every Tuesday, approximately 12:30 Central Time. Totally my fault. We're late today. I apologize. We alternate channels. This week we're over here on my channel, Angie Atkinson, and next week we'll be over on Dana's channel, which is called Thrive After Abuse, right here on YouTube. You can also find Dana around the web at thriveafterabuse.com and Thrive After Abuse on all the different socials. What else do we need to say? Oh yeah, another thing. Make sure you subscribe to both channels and hit the bell notification to be notified by YouTube. But since YouTube's notifications are a little wonky sometimes, you might also want to hit our text line. So you can text Angie Live, all one word, to 33222, and Dana Live, all one word, to 22999, so that we can text you a few minutes before we go live each time, whether we go live separately or together. Dana, anything I forgot?
Nope, that's it. That's good.
Oh, right on. All right. Hello, everybody. So what we thought we would talk about today is I did a little short the other day about, I think it was yesterday actually, about, but they didn't hit me, because a lot of times, I personally stayed in an abusive relationship too long because I didn't get hit. Because in my own mind, I thought, you know, well, he's not beating me, so it must not be abuse. And I think a lot of people felt the same way, stayed in marriages for decades when they shouldn't need to. So that's what we're talking about today. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one of the biggest challenges with seeing abuse for what it is, because it's kind of, well, it tends to be this slow descent, mm-hmm. right? So it's just kind of the series of boundary pushing behavior. Yeah. And a lot of it can be, if a person doesn't have kind of healthy boundaries, and I would say most people don't, because this stuff's not taught. Healthy mm-hmm. boundaries are not taught. It's, in fact, it's the opposite of what's taught. Society kind of teaches us, oh, you got to forgive and forget, nobody's perfect, and this kind of stuff. So we tend to find ourselves glossing over things, thinking, okay, well, it wasn't that bad. It could always have been worse, or I've experienced worse, or this is somehow workable, you know, these kinds of things. And so even with physical abuse, it's unless it matches our understanding of what physical abuse is, it's easy to minimize and justify. And
so true.
You know, yeah. Verbal and emotional.
And I think that's part of, for me anyway, I know it's.
Oh,
sorry, I had a delay. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. I was just gonna say, you know, and for verbal and emotional and psychological abuse, it's even trickier to spot. And so people do tend to stay for years or even decades confused as to what's going on. Is it, you know, what's workable? What's deal breaker stuff? Is it their fault? Did they cause it? And how do they go about fixing it? So, yeah. What was the response from the short that you did?
Yep, for sure. Oh, I got so many comments. A lot of people felt the same way. They didn't have, you know, nobody told them it was abuse. They didn't know that they could, you know, they knew they were miserable. But, and the other side of this, let me just point this out too. Maybe you just, I had a little connection issue for a minute, but I think the other side of it, and if you did just say this, please just tell me to stop, is we tend to want to fix ourselves because we assume that we are the problem. And a lot of times that's because of how we grew up, right? Or something. Sorry, I'm laughing at a comment Jack made in chat.
Oh, anyway. Is it about my yeah. hair?
He said it's wild, but he likes
it. Yeah, it is. It's very humid out here today. This is the best we can do with spray gel. And
I think it looks great. Actually, it's beautiful. But anyway, I even said right before we got, oh, your hair looks awesome. As soon as I saw her face, just saying. Okay. All right, here we go. Where were we? Oh yeah.
So go ahead. People responding to your short were saying, yeah, that really resonated with them.
Yeah, a lot of people. And let me, I feel like pulling up the comments, but I won't because we're on live right now. But yeah, everybody was, a lot of people commented, and it felt felt like people wanted to talk about it more, you know, and I've seen, you know, and we've talked about it. I know we have over the years in different situations. But I think part of the reason that I started doing what I do, and I think for the same for you, Dana, is that we didn't know while we were in the middle of it, at least, you know, at some point, what was happening until we knew. And so I think that's why a lot of people feel the need to, you know, there's this weird thing happening on my YouTube page. Okay. It's like this blinking thing. Can you hear me?
Sorry. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Really weird. Anyway. Yeah. So a lot of people have noted that they thought they were the problem. The narcissist told them they were the problem, so they believed it. Or they thought, well, and like I was saying, I attempted to help my narcissist sort of, you know, meld with me or blend with me, you know, so we could compromise. Because I think in a healthy relationship, what you see happening is, like, you imagine that sometimes you're the rock and sometimes you're the stream, right? So mm-hmm. sometimes you're going to be smoothing your partner's rough edges and vice versa, right? But that doesn't happen with a narcissist. And so in my own case, when I was trying to help smooth the rough edges, as it were, I learned quickly that wouldn't happen. And so I needed to, you know, file myself down to a flat surface. I'm going a little too far with that metaphor, but you get the point. I had to change myself to the point that it was an uncomfortable amount of change. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the most, I think, covert, most damaging parts of this is the result of that, of filing down all those edges, because all of those edges is what makes a person unique, right?
It's yes.
What makes you, you, and all those edges is sort of like, okay, well, I'm going to just, you know, file this part down in order to try to get along better, or in order to try to keep the peace. And because that's mm-hmm. what you know, relationships take work, right? Like that's yeah. what we're all supposed to be doing. And so we're just kind of silencing these different parts of ourselves and rounding those edges. And then when we're out of that relationship, it's this feeling of, man, I feel like a shell of myself. Like, I don't know who I am. And, or maybe even the parts that I do know, I don't like, and they're just left with no self-esteem and feeling like they ruined, that they weren't enough, that they yes. somehow didn't try hard enough, or that they yes. weren't enough to make this relationship work, when in reality it's no, you got tangled up with mm-hmm. a deeply dysfunctional person who, you know, more than likely all that kind of behavior, because it's not talked about and it's not taught, it totally went against your worldview of what a relationship was about. And so we, because of that, we just absorbed all of those messages of, oh, it's your fault. You didn't, you know, it's everything wrong with you, that we absorbed that as truth. And so then we're carrying that around thinking, oh no, mm-hmm. no, I'm just, I'm unlovable, basically.
Yeah. 100%. That's exactly what I did, you know, and I know you probably, and a lot of other people have mentioned the same thing. Yeah. I see a comment here from, let's see. Sorry about the laughing, Jack. I didn't mean it in a bad way. he's like, they both have beautiful hair, even on bad hair days. Thank you. Narcissistic abuse healing art recovery says, sometimes they throw in so much word salad that it can get so confusing unless you really remember to keep it simplified to know what you're dealing with. Oh, and know what you're dealing with. Yeah. And that's really the truth. And I think that's, you know, a lot of the gaslighting stuff. it's definitely... And the word salad, all that. Oh, by the way, I'll tell you that another day. Okay. So I'm going to stay on topic. Yeah, that's definitely the truth. The manipulation throws you completely off base. And I think that's why I sometimes advise people, when they start to recognize what they're going through, to like get a notebook or put it in their phone on Evernote or something, so they can write down what does happen so they don't lose their minds. And it sounds funny, right? But yeah, it really helps, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, that's the really damaging part of gaslighting, and that's why it's so damaging, is it rattles a person to the core, and it makes them question their reality. and makes them question themselves. Mm-hmm. And it leads to that level of introspection of, is it them or is it me?
Yeah.
Am I being too sensitive? Am I just not go with the flow enough, or is it them that has the problem? And man, and every time, when we're with a deeply dysfunctional person, and there is that slow erosion. So if it's sort of like, okay, here's the issue. Mm-hmm. Is it me or is it them? And if we keep accepting that it's us, we keep giving them more rope, right? Sure. Like we keep letting go of who we are. And then it's so, and especially, oh man, my heart just goes out. I just so remember being there where if you don't know about terms like gaslighting, right, or if you've never been on the receiving end of it, it's so hard to fathom how much it can really rattle you, where you just don't know what's up and what's down anymore. Your whole reality is just spun around.
So true. Yeah. And that's the worst part of it, is that, you know, you become a shadow or a shell of what you once were, and, or what you could have been, you know, depending. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And I know that, you know, going through it, like, even when you're in it and you learn the terms, you know, you doubt yourself, right? You go, I'm being silly. I'm overthinking this. It's just, I'm just too this, that, or the other, whatever they, you know what I mean? So there's this cognitive dissonance maybe that happens between what you see on the paper or on the video or whatever that says, this is, and you look at it, you go, that's my life. But then you go, you know, once you're back with that person or you see that person again or whatever, you start to doubt it because, you know, I don't know about you, but I developed, and I think a lot of us do, I think you did too, a very high threshold for abuse, right? Like I tolerated way more than I should have. And part of that was because I wasn't getting hit in that relationship. You know what I mean? And because when things would get better, because they did inevitably for a while here and there, you know, they would go up and down. And so when things would be okay, I would be like, I was just overthinking everything. You know, I must've been hormonal or whatever. And this would go on repeatedly all the time. And I don't know how I didn't catch it sooner. You know what I mean? But it was because there was no information out there at that time, very little, you know? So, yeah.
Well, and that's such a valid point that you bring up that I don't think we've ever talked about that before, but about even after, right? Like you hear, you understand concepts like gaslighting or emotional abuse or narcissistic abuse or any of these terms, it helps, but to an extent. So it can even cause further cognitive dissonance of, is this real? Maybe I just have been watching too much of this stuff on YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't help either if we have other people around us that are justifying the problem. Right? No, you just think everyone's a narcissist. Not everybody's like your ex. You've got a love like you've never been hurt before. There's just so many damaging messages that can pull a person off
the trail. Advice for...
Yeah. Mystique says,
Let's talk about just...
Oh, there's a delay, I think. I'm going to try closing out some of my stuff. Maybe that would help. I don't know.
I'm not sure if it's me or you. Go ahead. It could be me. I'm not sure.
Go ahead. I'm going to.
Okay.
I'll zip it and you talk for a while.
I'm sorry. It's okay. Okay. I think you were going to read Mystique's comment about thinking he suffered so much depression and just didn't understand. And that was definitely, I can relate to that as well. Thinking that the ex, you know, was going through their own mental health problems. And, you know, that's why they were so mean, rude, disrespectful, et cetera. And they would probably even say that, I would guess, because I know mine did. Mine would say, this is whatever. Anyway, so one of the things I was going to say, though, in response to what you were saying before, is the movie thing or the love story thing that happens. In Hollywood, on television, on the big screen, you see think about most of the love stories. What you have is one partner or the other resisting, right? Or they both resist, and then they end up together and everything's perfect or whatever. But everything that happens up to that point, if you really look at it with an a different perspective. It's not cute and sweet. A lot of it is really toxic. You know what I mean? Those love stories that they, I'm just thinking of like that, gosh, I can't remember. Cameron Diaz was in it, I think. And there was a, gosh, I can't remember the name. It was like, the guy was like a self-help author or something. And he was like, he's just not that into you. I don't know. But anyway, whoever was in it, I can't remember. But the whole story was, maybe it was Jennifer Aniston. No, I don't know who it is. This is a bad thing to talk about because I don't know the name of the movie, but it's an example. So no, it was Katherine Heigl. That's who it was. Okay. So guy meets girl. Girl's like the guy's producer or something. She hates him. He hates her. He thinks she's uppity. She thinks he's a pig. Both things are true, kind of, you know, and they basically hate fall in love, you know, and that never works. I mean, I tried to hate myself, happy, skinny, healthy, lots of things, but none of those things work. It doesn't work. You can't hate yourself or someone else better. Right. But in the movies it works. And that's a toxic thing about our society. Anyway, thoughts.
Yeah. Well, you know, and on the flip side of that, we can't love somebody else better either.
Darn right.
Right. Like we can lovingly support ourselves and we can lovingly support somebody else. But mm-hmm. I just want to have a caveat there that it's only lovingly if it's couched within the context of healthy boundaries. Mm. So if boundaries are absent and which I think is the situation for so many of us, it's this idea of I'll help you, I'll fix you, I'll carry you across the finish line, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. But it's sinking ourselves to save somebody else. And that's not love. That's codependence.
100%.
And yep. Realizing the difference. But again, there's so many damaging messages that are out there in movies, music, you name it, about what love is and even like what abuse is and like what's
right. It's true. Absolutely. Oh, Grace says, yes, that's exactly what I did. I've been working with my therapist to reduce the self-blame. She was doing the same thing we were doing, or that we were just talking about a little while ago about, you know, kind of self-doubt and not, you know, blaming the self, blaming herself for what was happening and doubting whether she actually understood. I think I just went off camera again.
Yep.
Let me fix it. I guess I need to get a new camera. Darn it. I thought it was my computer that I just replaced, but no. Okay. Oh, no. That's all right. Cameras are cheap. I mean, sometimes. anyway. Yeah. So, yeah. So I can totally, I think a lot of us do that, Grace. I don't think you're on your own. Any thoughts on that, Dana?
Yeah. And I will say to Grace and to other people out there, what I have experienced a lot of is that people, myself included, tend after a narcissistically abusive relationship are very quick to kind of connect everything, every problem they have moving forward in relationships. They're like, oh, it's because of my past one. It's because of this trauma in my past relationship. Mm-hmm. My ex really gaslighted me. And that's, you know, I'm feeling really invalidated in my current relationship, but I think it's because of unhealed stuff from my past relationship. That might be true. However, it also might be true that you're experiencing some shade of gaslighting or invalidation in your current relationship. Mm-hmm. So I would just caution people as you're working through this, it's very important to examine, to proceed with caution when you're linking up cause and effect, because it, if a life coach or a therapist or whoever you're working with doesn't have a really solid grasp on understanding that difference, they can potentially start following you down that rabbit hole thinking, yes, it's from the past. We need to work through this. It's just, you know, old triggers. And it's important to explore, okay, what's actually going on now? And is there any invalidation now, even if it's not, the person's not anything like your ex, even if they're well-intended, even if. So, so there's kind of just this, what kind of waking up period or like reconnecting to ourself period where we're getting in tune with what, invalidation is and, what what it feels like when our boundaries are crossed and how to handle that. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is a really, I'm sorry, I hope you don't mind I'm throwing this in now, but it's a really insightful comment from Anja that really lends to kind of what we were just talking about. Narcissists live in another world, but they know how to talk to you as if it's really true. Nothing is more powerful than to use a situation to make the other person look like an abuser. And that's when, you know, we say reactive abuse or whatever, but that, don't you think that's insightful here? Mm-hmm. It's really true. I can personally, I mean, I'm not going to say the name of the person, but everyone that I used to, every narcissist over the years that I've been involved with, someone has said about that person, let's say their name was Becky. Oh, Becky's over in Becky's world again today. You know what I mean? Somebody would say that about that person. And I just think that's such an interesting, insightful comment. So let me just really quick ask everybody in the chat, if you have thought to yourself or heard about one of your narcissists or former narcissists, people that you were involved with who were toxic, did anyone ever say, you know, they're in so-and-so's world, or, oh, that's just so-and-so's world and not the real world, or anything like that? Okay, moving on.
Yeah.
Dana?
Yeah, you know, and that, you know, that level of conviction and
yes,
they are right, that threw me off for a very long time too. And that can be tricky. So like when you, if you're reading about or watching YouTube videos or kind of exploring all of this, and you're hearing people talk about manipulation or manipulation tactics in a methodical way of like, okay, well, they love bomb, and then they, you know, then there's kind of this bait and switch, and then there's this and that. It's sometimes with the truly predatory people out there, like the emotional con artists of the world, it is that methodical.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, it's not. It's what, and what you're seeing is that person's very, you're seeing that level of dysfunction in that person, that they're rewriting reality on the fly. And it's wild. I think probably the best example of seeing this kind of stuff is in different like true crime videos, when they catch, you know, when they're doing the interrogation in the police room, and they know the person's guilty and the person's getting more and more defensive. Yes. Well, I can't believe you. I loved this person. I would never hurt them. And they're going on and on. And then they shift to, they start blaming the person.
Yes.
Right. Like Chris Watts comes to mind. So yeah. So like that kind of stuff. And if you've never experienced something like that, that level of conviction in what they're saying can come across as truth, because most people feel like, man, I would be really passionate about this too if I was innocent of something, or if I really believed in, sincerely believed in something. But it just goes to show you that they're constantly rewriting reality to make it fit their ego, their own
narrative. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry. I think I went offline for a minute. No, I'm with you on that actually. And the conviction thing, I want to touch on that too. I've seen narcissists blatantly lie about facts and convince a whole room full of people of a fact. Like, for example, let's just say it's not pronounced rain, it's pronounced Rayen, you know, or whatever, something lame like that, like just to see if they could do it. And they're so serious about whatever it is that it's not even a valid or a worthy, not that there's such a thing as a worthy manipulation, but they get nothing out of it except making people believe something that's not true. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know, that level of conviction is crazy. And of course they use it to manipulate you directly, but they'll do it just because they can sometimes, just to see what happens. It's so weird.
Well, it's that duper's delight.
Exactly.
And that's also kind of, again, with those police interrogation videos, you know, you think to yourself, man, if you're guilty, you need to stop talking. Like, why is this person agreeing to do a lie detector test? Why are they, you know, agreeing to do all these interviews? And the answer is, it's arrogance.
Yes.
They really think that they're so clever that they're just snowing everybody.
Yeah.
And they're not. The true professionals can see that train coming down the track, and they're just letting them talk their way into a set of handcuffs. It's like, yeah, just keep on talking, because it's ridiculous. And But that's what they do. And so it's important to realize there's that difference there between kind of innocence and shamelessness.
Yes.
So that level of conviction is not innocence, it's shamelessness. This person has no shame. They don't feel like they did anything wrong. It's guiltlessness, it's shamelessness. In their mind, they've spun things around to make themselves the victim. Yep. And to get the heat off their back. It's absolutely wild.
I cannot disagree with that. You got a comment for us? If not, I have one.
Go for it if you've got one. Look for one now.
All right. So I have Hufflemom talking about when we're older and we have more control over our lives and we go through the challenge of accepting and helping the remnants of our inner children accept that they never had to fix it. As difficult as it was for me to accept that I wasn't to blame for what happened to me, when I did, it was like the weight of the world lifted off of my shoulders. It was very freeing. And then UNA adds, yeah, I write cathartic letters to myself. When I doubt myself, I can read them. And I realize I really did go through all that. And this is an interesting point that's being kind of combined here, because what I see is I relate to the inner child thing all the way through. But also accepting that you weren't to blame for what happened to you is what I'm seeing. I think every one of us must have at some point doubted it, right? Maybe I really was just a little bit too this, that, or the other thing, or maybe I should have been more or less or whatever of something, you know? But like we've talked about, I mean, I like the idea of writing cathartic letters to yourself.
I do too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I've talked about making lists before, which is not the same as a letter, but I mean, I do a letter thing, but it's not for this part usually, but it could help. But the lists for me have been really helpful. I'll have people make lists of every single thing, every single, like, if possible, during, you know, or just slightly after what happens, you know, like as soon as you get to the point where you have time to calm down, if you're still in the relationship, to write that stuff down right away with all of the feeling words you can think of, right? Because when you come back, and a letter would be just as good. But when you, and then I have them put it away and I have them use it as no contact insurance. Because when you do feel tempted, if you are out, or when you feel tempted to doubt yourself or to, you know, let yourself be sucked back in or whatever, you can then read the list and try to remember how it felt. Because unfortunately, even inside the relationship, when things are good again, you really literally develop abuse amnesia in the moment. And of course, outside the relationship, it's easy, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. But when things are good when things were good for me in my relationship, I would, like I said, I would question, well, probably just being hormonal, probably thinking too much and everything's fine. What am I thinking about? You know what I mean? And so I think that's really smart to write letters. Thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I like what you and Aid said too about going back and reading them.
Yes.
And kind of writing that variety of cathartic letters to yourself, because it's really wild how much of a transitional period this is for people. It's kind of reconnecting to yourself after abuse and getting out of the situation. And it's a great way to see your own growth. So who you are, you know, today is very different from who you were even 6 weeks ago. And it's going to be very different than who you are 6 weeks from now.
Right.
So kind of journaling all of this, it's really wild because you'll go back and be like, oh man, I cannot believe I ever struggled with this. Or how did I ever get through that? Or you see the situation so much more clearly. So here's a comment from Katina.
So true. Said, yeah.
He was physically abusive, mm-hmm. but I feel like it was my fault.
Okay. So literally it's never your fault if you're physically abused. I mean, okay, let me, maybe if you were beating them up first and they defended themselves and you're calling that abuse, but other than that, no, I personally don't think it's ever your fault. I literally, you know, civilized adults should never physically hurt another civilized adult or a child in that way. But in this case, I don't. Am I wrong, Dana? Am I
just not at all? And that's the thing. And this is why it can be so confusing, because abusive people
rationalize,
and they're also boundaryless people.
That's right.
So they expect other people to respect their boundaries, but they don't give the same in return. And so what that looks like in motion is this concept of, it's the whole, see what you made me do.
Yes.
You forgot to pay the phone bill. I got mad and I got so mad, I shoved you and you fell into the wall and broke your arm. That's your fault. I didn't mean to break your arm.
Right.
If you had just paid the phone bill, none of this would have happened. Yep. Well, okay. The thing is, a person can be frustrated or angry, but it's not okay for that to escalate to physical abuse. When physical abuse is touching another person without consent, mm-hmm. and it's also causing intimidation. So punching holes in walls behind them, throwing things at them, causing anybody harm. That's physical abuse. And yes. There's never a justification for that.
Right.
And you didn't cause it. You didn't deserve it. And it didn't start with you. And it's not going to end with you either. Because that's how that person handles their frustration and anger. And they see no problem with lashing out at another person.
Right. And that's not healthy or normal. Go ahead. Right. Sorry.
Well, Angie was saying, is kind of functional adults realize that. Right. So functional adults realize, okay, let's look at road rage. We've all experienced in infuriating drivers. It can be infuriating that a person might do something that legitimately is making a steam come out of our ears, but it's not okay to then, rear in their car or pull a gun on them or try to run them off the road.
Right.
So just because a person feels a certain way doesn't mean that it's somehow okay for them to act on those feelings.
Right.
And functional adults understand that. So.
Right. And on a similar note, I've seen a lot of physical abusers be likely to, like we said, justify, but they'll, like you were talking about, look what you made me do. That one really triggered me a little bit. I don't know if you know that, but that was from my childhood. that is, they say, that's when they'll claim mental illness sometimes. Well, I have this problem. Mm. I can't help it. You know what I mean? And that they can help it. And if they can't, they shouldn't be walking on the street, honestly. I'm sorry for saying that, but I think that's true.
Well, and the reality is, if they can't help it, then it's important for other people to realize that if a person has some sort of personality disorder, mental illness, brain injury, cognitive impairment, whatever it might be that causes them to be that reactive and dangerous, then that's not a safe relationship to be in. So it doesn't matter. And it's okay. And it's healthy and it's reasonable to have boundaries around them. It doesn't matter if they're a sociopath or if they were in a bad car accident and then have a closed brain injury, or if they have Alzheimer's, they have bipolar or schizophrenia. None of that matters. And that I know that can sound really like lacking in compassion, but it's not. It's always appropriate to have healthy boundaries and to make your safety a priority. It's boundaries aren't to punish the other person, they're to protect you. So.
Right. That's right. I disagree. Do you have another comment for us, or I have one if you don't?
Go for it.
Okay. I have, two. Mystique says, I had no idea what was happening. As I'm adding this in print, I had no idea I was being abused. Whoa. That was lucky I had a lid on that water bottle. and then he almost drove me nuts so many times. And I think that is something that we can all relate to, and we've talked about. I just wanted to bring that comment out. And then a rationalist, great name, said, my ex is a narcissist. She kidnapped my children during divorce proceedings and moved to another country. I have no choice but to move there now, but my family and friends are stopping me. That's horrible. And this is, I think, an extreme example, right, of what can happen. I'm sorry that's happening. I think when you're in a situation like that, I wonder, are there any legal options that you have to force her to keep them in the same country? I don't know. Dana, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would contact an attorney and figure out what rights are and kind of what you're looking at.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sure that they have an attorney. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
You got one for us?
I do. Here's a comment. Well, I guess first off, I just wanted to address something. I just saw there's a couple comments from Fatima in the chat. It looks like she's really struggling with depression, and somebody had mentioned the helpline number in the chat. And I would just, I think my guess is Angie and I are both on the same page with that, of that's always a good resource to contact hotlines. It's a great place to just be heard and to talk and to get some help.
Yeah. And I know isn't Fatima under a certain age?
She's
living at home.
She's an adult now.
Oh, okay. Good.
But yeah.
Okay. I think it's a good place to start. I also think, Fatima, you should consider going to your doctor and having a little discussion about either getting some therapy or whatever the doctor thinks is appropriate. But it seems like if you're still going through all of this, that you should just take care of yourself.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
Colby says, yeah, it sucks when you gaslight yourself. And this is obviously not related to Fatima's thing. But that one, I just want to point out, the first time I heard that was from a longtime viewer named Ted. And I think that's funny because he's the first person that ever said to me, I keep gaslighting myself. And I thought that's so funny that you said that, but it's true. It sounds funny, but we do, we sort of do it on behalf of, I always say we have the narcissist voice in our head, and I don't mean anything about schizophrenia, but just the feelings that we develop about ourselves when we're in these relationships are very often related to the narcissist perception of us instead of what's true. Right. So I wanted to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I got one more if you want it.
go for it. Go for it. I had one and I lost it. I'm trying to find it again.
Go ahead. While you look, let's see. Narcissistic abuse healing art recovery says, the minute the term narcissist enters the world of your relationship with the narcissist, it becomes who's the narcissist when you know who the narcissist is. And this, my friend, is exactly why I always advise, don't tell them that you think they're a narcissist. Don't use the word gaslighting with them. Don't use, because I mean, nowadays you can probably use the word gaslighting because it's pretty popular, but back in the day, people didn't know what that meant. And if you told them, what did they do? They Googled it. So now, I would not tell someone I think they're a narcissist because that's exactly what they do. They Google it and then they start calling you the narcissist as mentioned. So thoughts on that, Dana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's, there's very little benefit or value of, and think about it in the reverse. If, cause calling somebody a name like that, it's considered pathologizing. So nobody wants to be told, gosh, well, you're so borderline, or you're such a narcissist, or you're such a this or that. It comes across as demeaning, and it's not helpful. It doesn't contribute to the conversation at all. So your time and energy is better spent focusing on your boundaries. And okay, if you've got a difficult or a high conflict type person in your life, then what can you do about it to limit the damage? So here's the comment. I'm glad she reposted it because I was trying to find it. It's from Tam Tam, who says, I'm leaving him after 20 years. At first, it was a secret. I was going to go no contact, but now he's been so nice to me. I was just wondering, why is this?
Oh, can I start?
Go for it.
Me? Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I think I have a bad connection today. I'm so sorry. Okay. So the way that I see that is he's hoovering you. He knows you want to leave. And so now he's trying to, my ex-husband did the same thing. The minute they find out you're trying to leave and they don't want you to leave, they suddenly become perfect, perfect wife, perfect husband, whatever. And then, you are then, I literally, the night before I left my ex-husband, we slept hand in hand in bed. And it destroyed me to leave, but I knew I had to go. you know what I mean? It wasn't, I couldn't not, but I wanted to not go. And had I not already lined up a whole bunch of people to help me move my stuff, I probably wouldn't have gone. I mean, I know that's ridiculous, but it's true because I didn't know what I was dealing with at the time. You understand what I mean? And so I was, but that's exactly, they hoover you back in, or they try to suck you back in when they know that they're about to lose you. And so what he's doing is, as you know, after 20 years, this will be short-lived. The minute that he thinks he's got you back in his clutches, you know what he's going to do. He's going to go right back to the same reason you're leaving. So make sure you remember why you're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thoughts, Dana?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it is. And think about it this way. Pretty much all of us are like this to some degree. Whenever we're facing consequences that for our behavior that we don't want to face, let's say you're at work and your boss is like, you know what? I think we're done. I think we need to start looking for somebody else, right? If you really want to keep that job going, maybe you just need the paycheck. There's something you're getting out of that job. You're going to be on your best behavior. But the thing is, if you haven't learned how to maintain that behavior, right? So if your boss is like, gosh, you're really disorganized, there's this problem, there's that problem. The thing is, if you haven't done the work to develop different systems and different behavior that's maintainable, then you're just going to backslide into the old way of being. It's the same thing in a relationship. So people handle stressful situations. They handle problems in the way that they know how. And so if what you're experiencing is somebody who's handling their stress, their frustration, their controlling issues, whatever, in a very abusive way, it's because they don't have another skill set. So in order for them to change, and I'm not saying this to like evoke compassion or empathy, I'm just saying this so you can kind of understand the road that you're in for. If you were to stay, it's them unlearning all of the maladaptive ways of being and then building up adaptive ways of being and then being open to the process, because it's not just one type of behavior, it's across the board. And even if you think right now, oh no, it's just this one thing, if they just stopped yelling at me, everything would be fine, I guarantee you that's not the case. So because it's that boundary busting behavior takes multiple forms. Generally, when a person is verbally abusive, they're also emotionally abusive, and they're also psychologically abusive. If they're pushing boundaries in one way, they're probably pushing boundaries in a multitude of ways, or flat out crossing boundaries in a multitude of ways. And the challenge with abusive people, or people with abusive behavior, however you want to say it, is they are very defensive. And so when a person, again, we all experience this. Okay. So if we're defensive about something and somebody's saying, hey, no, you really need to change this, this isn't working, I can't handle this anymore, if you feel even somewhat justified in that, or if you feel like you're being called out or whatever it is, there's going to be pushback, right? There's that defensiveness. And when that defensiveness is present, then you lock horns again, right? So they're no longer hearing you, because they're defensive, they're defending themselves, and you're trying to reach a solution, but they're trying to defend themselves. And so then you're at the stalemate. And so moving, it's a long uphill process with these kinds of things. So I just want to say, if you are even remotely entertaining that idea, and Angie's right, you've been through this, this is not your first rodeo. You've been doing this for probably 20 years, right? Get clear on what kind of changes that you need to see and in what time frame. So then you know, okay, this is part of the cycle of they treat me poorly, and then they say whatever they need to in order to pull me back in, and then I stay, and then it keeps happening. So getting clear with yourself of, okay, when is enough enough, and when are you gonna do something different and kind of hop off this roller coaster? So.
Right. And, you know, on that same note, I would like to say, can you hear me?
I can. Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Okay. On that same note, I would like to add that you, take the time right now and write down the list, because look, 20 years, you know, that man is not changing. Okay. I'm not trying to be, I'm just saying, make a list of the reasons you're leaving. Remember, because keep going. If you're really going, go, because 20 years, a person, you know, let's say if y'all got married at 20 and now he's 40. And I think maybe he was a little, I don't know your age, but let's just say that nobody's going to change if he's been this whole time for 20 years, unless there's some big significant, like, life-changing. I mean, yes, your wife leaving you is a significant life-changing event and he might change, but go and then try to work it out from your new place that's more comfortable without all the narcissists. Just saying. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just saying. I don't know if I'm clear, if I'm being heard or not, Dana might.
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. Okay. Good. All right. Now I want to, do you mind if I bring up this point about a rationalist again, with the children in the other country?
Sure.
Cause I, okay. Said they just want me to be safe and not engage with her in any way and fight for custody, but they're saying you're not going to get it anyway. And I'll just get alienated and get more hurt emotionally speaking. So let's talk about that really quick. This is really difficult because they're your children, right? And I feel like even though I would know that this is a possibility, I would personally, and I'm not saying I'm right, but I would personally do whatever I could to at least be in my children's lives, right? Especially if they're small children. If they're older, you know, if they're in their teens, late teens, maybe I would just, you know, write them letters or something if I had to, but I can't imagine the pain that you must be in. I just want to tell you, I'm really sorry that you're going through that. It is not advice, but I'm just saying, if I were in your shoes, I would not be able to not try, you know? I don't know how people can do that, but Dana, maybe you have better advice than me on that. I don't know. Thoughts?
Yeah, that's just devastating. I can't imagine. I guess I would just encourage you, talk to an attorney. Mm-hmm. An attorney is going to give you a lot of that clarity that you're looking for.
That's right.
Okay, what would be the next step if you were to move forward? What are you looking at in terms of the odds of you getting partial custody, of her being forced to return, of mm-hmm. all of these things?
Yeah, I think it depends on the laws of both countries, right? But I don't know. Don't quote me on that, but I'm just saying I feel deeply for you because I can't imagine not being able to see my kids. Yeah. Really sorry about that. Okay. Oh, and this one from Mystique. Did you already read this one about hindsight from Mystique?
No.
Okay, good. With hindsight, we feel so dumb because once we learn about the tactics, we can't unsee them. And it seems so clear now. Yes. I cannot tell you how angry I was at myself for wasting so many years being clueless. And I thought, I'm smart. I understand people. This makes no sense to me. How could an intelligent person be duped by these people? Half the time they're less intelligent than us. How can we allow this to happen? But don't let yourself feel dumb, because you have to understand this is a very pervasive, like sort of underhanded, subtle thing at first. And so they kind of slowly kind of pull you in. It's like that frog in the pot, you know, frog in the boiling water thing, you know, where the frog gets in the water, it's kind of nice and kind of heats up slowly, feels good. And then the frog's boiling, you know what I mean? They can't jump out. But if you threw them right in while it was boiling, they would jump right out. You know what I mean? It's not like we jumped into it thinking, oh gosh, this is terrible. We got in and it felt good at first, you know, and then, yeah. So don't beat yourself about that. Dana, thoughts or anything you want to add?
That's the challenge with hindsight. Is it's always 2020,
and right?
You know, it's kind of that old saying of all any of us can do is the best we can with the information that we have at the time. And when we know different, we can do different.
That's right.
And that can be so difficult to give ourselves that compassion and grace for not knowing different at the time.
Yes.
But the reality is, you know, we didn't. And mm-hmm. nobody goes through life doing everything perfectly. So everybody makes mistakes. Everybody gets, you know, caught up in things that they wouldn't have otherwise had they known different. You know, sort of like, I think about it this way in terms of online scams. If you guys remember when the internet, you know, like when Craigslist kind of first hit the scene, and for a while it was legit. People were posting stuff for sale, posting rooms for rent. It was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was kind of the place to go for finding stuff. And then the scammers caught on. And then people were getting scammed right and left. And then it got to the point where more and more information began coming out about it. People saying, okay, you know, don't give people money. If people saying that they'll send you a car, that they're overseas and that they're in the military, you know, they want to send you a deposit on your property or whatever. Don't. It's 100%. It's a scam. And so people began catching on, and now it's so obvious, right? Like nobody's really getting, or very few people, I think, are getting caught up with that kind of stuff these days because there's been so much information about it. And it can be so hard to look back and be like, I cannot even believe that, you know, that it was ever, that it was just ever a struggle.
I mean, it was crazy how many Nigerian princes there were, you know.
Yeah. Well, in our area, it was armed, it was military.
Oh, so, that's new now. Yeah. I mean, where I live, I've seen it lately recently. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
We had somebody, it was my former tenants. So my ex-husband was military. Mm-hmm. So that was the hard thing, is because a lot of this was kind of believable. Like, mm-hmm. Well, somebody could be being deployed, or their car could actually be here, or, you know, they could need to have a deposit on something. And so it was, and we lived in a military community, so it wasn't that out of the ordinary, but people were getting scammed right and left. We'd rented our house at one point, and our tenants had rented their house because they were moving from another state. They mm-hmm. actually had people show up in a moving van to their house. And they had paid a deposit and everything, thinking they had rented this house.
Wow.
And it was all a scam. My renters had never emailed them. They'd never spoken to them. They pulled all the pictures off the internet and put up this fake listing for a rental.
That's horrible.
And these people had nowhere to go. Like they had, you know, showed up with the moving truck. Yeah. So it's compassion and grace. That's all any of us can do in situations like that.
It's truth. Yep. We could do a whole hour on those scams, I'll tell you what. Yeah. But yeah. But let me just bring this up here. Helpful mom. Wait, is it my turn to bring up a comment?
You can. I've got another one.
Go ahead.
Okay. So Tam Tam, mm-hmm. the comment that I was just read, mm-hmm. she was saying, we are in our mid-50s. I have a place, but he keeps saying that I won't make it without him. She's the one that's been with him for 20 years.
Yes.
But I myself am wanting to heal. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Let me just throw it out here for you. He's telling you that because he wants you to doubt yourself. Just like my mother always told me that I would end up dead in a ditch if I didn't do whatever she wanted, because she would abandon me. And then she wouldn't help me if I did end up in a ditch. So I'd be dead. I mean, it sounds so silly, but I have made it and you will too. You know what I'm saying? Even if you struggle a little bit, but if you've already got a place, you're going to be okay. He's trying to make you doubt yourself. That's why he's love bombing you again, or hoovering, however you want to see it. And he's actively telling you, you can't do it by yourself.
Yep. And I'm not sure.
And the ability to breathe without getting yelled at. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I think I was cutting out.
Connections. Jinky again. I was just going to say, you know, Tam Tam, that statement in and of itself, of telling another person, you won't make it without me, that in and of itself is abusive. So he hasn't changed, right there. That's demeaning. It's meant to be defeating and discouraging. And that's not something that a person says if they love another person.
I lost myself for a minute. I fell off the computer. The thing went off and came back. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Yeah. I hope we're good. Okay. It looks like we're still both online. Yes. Okay. I have no idea what you just said. I'm so sorry, but I said a whole bunch of things and nobody heard.
Oh boy. Do you remember what you said?
No, it doesn't matter. Okay. It's fine. I mean, it probably, but I just, we'll go on. All right.
Here is another question. This is from Chloe, who says, is it best to raise a baby you have with a narcissist? Is it best to raise a baby that you've had with a narcissist alone than to file for child support and risk him going for 50-50 custody. We have a baby girl and he left me when I was 5 months pregnant and married another woman.
Ugh. Okay. Personally, I would say if you can afford to do it without child support, by all means, but I would still get it on file. And what I mean by that is obviously you all are, the baby's how old now? Did it say?
I believe, she doesn't say, but he left her when she was 5 months pregnant.
5 months pregnant. Okay. I assume he knows about the baby. I personally feel like, you know, it might be beneficial for you to file for child support, but then not to push it. And what I mean, if you can afford to not push it, that's what I did. I filed for child support just so I had it on record, which was through my divorce, right? It's good to have it on record just in case. But then after that, I didn't ever, and the kid's 23 now and the man owes me $50,000. I'll never see. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But having it on record is important. But if it's going to cost you 50-50 custody, I mean, it's a tough call. I want you to do what's right for you and your kid. But if you're in a position that you can afford to do it, I mean, it's always, and if he's not in your daughter's life at this point, but you're afraid that he will be in your daughter's life, if he is forced to pay and you can afford it, then I would say, you know, I don't know. You have to do what feels right to you. I personally realized that the narcissist being in my kid's life was not beneficial to my kid in this. Some narcissists can be good, fun parents, like the, you know, the weekend dad type or weekend mom type thing. But not always. And usually there comes a point in time when it's a little bit, at least emotionally unhealthy for the kid. I think you have to do what feels right to you in this situation. Dana, thoughts?
Yeah, I would talk to an attorney and let him know, like, these are the concerns. My guess is that he's probably not going to want 50-50 custody because he started a new life with this other woman. She's probably not going to want, to rate. That sounds terrible, right? But she's obviously in denial about what kind of guy he is. Mm-hmm. And he spun the story around. She probably wants a fresh start. She doesn't want to do that. So that would be my guess.
Let me throw this out here really quick. So sorry, Dana, but I just want to throw in another perspective. What I have seen sometimes a lot is, especially if the woman doesn't have children of her own already, or if she's especially codependent, she will want that baby. And look, we can have an instant ready-made family. And that's what scares me personally.
That's a very valid point.
Yeah. Yep.
Very valid. Yeah. Because keep in mind, he has spun this around to make you the bad guy and to make himself the victim. That's what they do. Regardless of gender, that's what they do. Because you're dealing with it's a dysfunctional mindset. So I would talk to an attorney, kind of see what your options are.
I agree. Yep. Definitely. And definitely share with the attorney any concerns you have around that stuff. And yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Changing my life. Wait a minute. Two things. I have two comments. Were you talking and I didn't hear you again?
No.
Sorry. Really. I think we have a delay.
Yeah. That's okay. Go for it.
Okay. I'm just going to go. Can anybody hear me? Okay. Okay. All right. Hufflemom said, I confess I've never really understood the whole falling in love at first sight thing. It seems to me that people who do that are actually very shallow. And I don't want to insult anyone, so I won't say that, but, but not shallow, naive is the way I'd like to put it. Because I certainly have felt, I never ever felt love at first sight, but I wanted to really bad. But no, I don't think it's even possible in real life to really fall in love at first sight. I genuinely don't, because you would only be falling in love with a person's appearance. And that's fleeting, as I know very well now, because I'm old. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, thoughts on first falling in love at first sight, Dana?
Yeah, I was talking about, I don't know if we talked about this last week or when I was talking about this, but somebody made a comment on the video that I was talking about that. And they said, well, Dana, gosh, that you sound pretty bitter and jaded because I don't believe in love at first sight. I believe in infatuation.
Yes.
But I think love is, it's truly something that you grow into. It's not something that you fall into. And, mm-hmm. And so I was thinking about that, like, oh, you know, is it bitter and jaded? And I thought, no, you know, I really believe that, thinking that love at first sight exists, it really cheapens the idea of love.
Mm.
Because like yes. you said, you're falling in love with how that person looks, or maybe some sort of, let's say you're, I don't know, you're volunteering and you're like, oh, this person has a great heart. Mm-hmm. Even if it's some sort of character trait about them, the reality is you still don't know them.
That's right.
And it's falling in love with the fantasy of who we think they are.
And that's just the worst thing you could do. Yeah.
It sorry. Really is. It really mm-hmm. is. It reminds me of, I don't know, I just saw this movie not too long ago. It was probably the stupidest movie I've ever, top five stupidest movies I've ever seen in my life. It was Meet Joe Black.
Mm.
Isn't that? Mm-hmm. The concept of this movie is that death, okay, death.
Who looks like Brad Pitt going.
The Grim Reaper, okay,
yes.
comes to Earth
mm-hmm.
in Brad Pitt's body.
Mm-hmm.
And
that happens. Yeah.
Because that happens, right? Yeah. This woman who meets him at like a coffee shop and falls in love with him. And this whole time I'm like clawing out my eyes because I'm like, this is so ridiculous. I can't even handle it. So she's so in love with him. He has absolutely no personality and he's like an alien come to Earth. He doesn't know like basic human things or social norms or anything. And he's just this weird dude with no personality, but hey, he looks like he's Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
She's so in love with him
so
and
stupid.
Can't realize, you know, later. Oh, I think, I don't know if he death swapped places with Brad Pitt or something, but she can't even realize that this is not even the same guy. And this is somehow supposed to be romantic. It was not, it was the most vapid drivel I've ever, top five vapid drivel films I've ever seen in my life. It was so ridiculous. And that's being passed off as romance. Like you don't know the guy, but as long as he looks like Brad Pitt, that's fine.
Yeah, just so you know. Sorry, that's hilarious and funny. I love that you said vapid drivel. Okay. that goes in with squirrely for me. I love both of those terms. Okay. They're different terms, but funny, equally funny. Okay. But I'm sorry. I'm going to stop talking about you the way I just like the way you talk. Okay. So creative. But I'm with you. And that's really interesting. That is a very good, I think a really good example of it being a bunch of BS, you know, because that's exactly what it is. When you fall in love at first sight, it's like you said, infatuation. Yes. I have been infatuated with people at first sight, but no, I have never experienced. And I don't think anyone really truly does. Now you can certainly be like, you know, people, I say, I saw him and I said, I'm going to marry that guy. Sometimes that happens. And sometimes they do get married, but almost inevitably, you know, if it works out, you're damn lucky. That's all I'm going to say.
It's a fluke. That's the thing. It's a fluke. It's not a fact. It's a fluke. And that's right. the important takeaway is it's the exception. It's not the norm. Just like, you know, let's say if you have kids and you're playing at the park and you see some really, I don't know, some nice, friendly looking person there, you wouldn't think this person would make a great babysitter. Right? I'm going to have them over and I'm going to have them move in with me to be my new live-in nanny. And I'm not going to wait around. I'm not going to interview them because I just know at the core of my being that they're the right person to watch my children. Or if you had a business, right? You wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, I have this idea. I love to make cake. You love to make cake. We have so much in common. We should totally start a business together.
Let's put all our money in the same account. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's put all our money in the same account, completely tie ourselves together, even though we haven't talked about how any of this is going to pan out. And we're just going to hope for the best because I just know because we both are so in love with this concept of making cakes together.
Right.
Terrible
how it works.
Idea. And when it does work out, it's
a fluke.
A fluke. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally. Yep. Okay. I got one more for us. Do you have any more for us?
I do, but
you go ahead because I did the last one.
Okay. This is from R.I. Crawford, who says, okay. I have been hit and desperately need a safe place. She is married to a man and I have no income besides food stamps. And I would say R.I. I would encourage you to call your local domestic violence shelter. A lot of, while it's true, a lot of shelters don't take men, they can oftentimes offer alternative housing, or at least help with free counseling or advocacy or arranging other services. So I would start there. Yeah.
Yes. Thehotline.org, go there, or call 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 7233. They have resources for men. Check it out and call them, please.
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay. And I agree with everything Dana said, and I apologize. I'm about to move on because we are out of time, and I just want to give this one more comment before we go. But please do, please call. Don't doubt yourself. Make the call, because you matter, and you are being, it doesn't matter if you're male or female. If you're being abused, you're being abused, period. Run. Okay. And if that number that we just gave you and that website that I just told you, they will at least give you resources to get you out, to, you know, help you find a way out one way or the other. Okay. Moving on. And also, if somebody hits you, I'm so sorry, last thing, if somebody hits you, call the police, because that's assault, and then have them removed, get your stuff together. And if it's not your house, get out. If it is your house, put new locks on the doors. Okay. And get a restraining order. Anything else before I move on to the question, Dana?
Nope. That's it.
Okay. Sorry. All right. Changing My Life says to Adrian, I didn't realize how much fog, fear, obligation, guilt I was in until I finally left, especially the impending sense of doom that I no longer have. So I avoid him 100%, because even going close brings those feelings. So I think this is something that I wanted to bring out for anyone who's on the edge, right? If you want to leave and you can't leave, you're scared to leave, or you have just left and you're scared to not go back, right? Just know that you're in that, the brain fog factor is happening, right? And so you're probably a little confused here and there, most likely. At least most people go through that during abuse, and after sometimes. But the fog that we're talking about here, fear, obligation, and guilt, right? You're scared of what's going to happen. The narcissist, of course, is feeding that fear. Obligation, if you've been married, if you've been with them for a long time, even if it's a relative or a family member, you're going to feel some kind of way connected or obligated. And they make sure to nurture that obligation. Every narcissist that I've ever met does that. And the guilt factor. But just remember that when you choose to stay with an abuser, you choose their life, their happiness over your own, and you choose to continue to be belittled and treated like you don't matter and ignored or overused, I should say, because some narcissists are constantly, time sucks, energy sucks. Some of them leave you hanging more often than you'd like. And then there's a combination. But the point is, you deserve better than abuse. Just, yes. All right. Thoughts, Dana?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I have a question here too. This is from Anita.
Okay.
Who says, I'm actually screaming for help here. I'm a single mom in a foreign country. I cannot leave right now to get help from my family and someone I can trust. I'm absolutely lost here. Is there anyone who can help me? And I just wanted to say, Anita, I want to give you a number. It's a nonprofit group. They help people exactly in your situation. So, and if they aren't going to be able to help, they hopefully they can point you in the right direction. But the number is 833-SAFE, S-A-F-E, 833. So 833-SAFE, 833. And you can also Google.
Thank you, Dana. That's a really important.
You can Google whatever country. I'm guessing, since you use the word mom, that you're somewhere in the UK. So Googling kind of being a UK citizen being abused in another country or something like that, and see if you can find resources that can help you.
Yeah. And again, I had a client. I don't know. Can you hear me, Dana?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody. Okay. I had a client who went through a similar thing. Okay. I think I'm just going to tell that story next week, because I can't, I think my connection is terrible. So, can you hear me now?
I can't. Yeah. You're cutting in and out. I'm not sure who's.
All right. Take us out, Dana.
Okay.
I can't, my connection's bad. Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. I guess thank you everybody for being here this week. And this is a live stream Angie and I try to do every Tuesday afternoon, 12:30 Central Time, 1:30 PM Eastern Time. If you would like to be notified when we go live, you can sign up for our text alerts. Well, you can subscribe to both of our channels. So Angie Atkinson, and then my channel is Thrive After Abuse. We alternate channels. And to subscribe to our text alerts, type or text the words Angie Live, all one word, to the number 33222, and or Dana Live, all one word, to the number 22999. And with that said, we'll, I guess, see you next week.
Thanks, everybody. Sorry, Dana. I don't know what's going on with my connection. I'll fix it.
That's okay.
All right. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
See you later.